Hi there. Welcome to the inaugural episode of the Change Manifesto podcast. The goal of this series is to empower individuals and businesses to liberate themselves from change resistance and effortlessly ignite change. We'll be doing this one episode at a time. I am your host and change manager enthusiast, Molly Angel. Welcome to the very beginning of your change management journey. This series is all about, you guessed it, enacting positive change in your organization, team, oh heck, even in your personal life. In each episode, I will be focusing on a different aspect of the change management world and teaching you, dear listener, to develop the tools necessary to best manifest whatever changes you have on the horizon. I believe that knowledge is power, but so often limited access to that knowledge is what prevents most of us from reaching our full potential. And power that is inaccessible doesn't help anyone. That's why I started this podcast. Think of these episodes as bite-sized lessons. They're designed specifically to provide you with the knowledge you need to become an expert in enacting change. The idea is to listen to the podcast and use the other resources I provide. And by doing this, you will develop real-world change competency without putting in the loads of time and dollars required to get certified in one of several change management methodologies like I did. Think of me as your change conduit. I did the heavy lifting, so you don't have to. And now I'm here to pass that value on to you. So what are you in for? Well, these lessons will be part philosophy and change methodology and part real-life case studies taken from my years of experience in the industry. There will be interviews with colleagues and change leaders who are forging new paths in change management today, exercises you can apply to your change initiatives now, and tips and tools you can use to start increasing your own capacity for change. Let's start with the basics and define this thing. What exactly is change management? If you found your way this far, you may already have a basic understanding of what change management is, or at the very least, that you might need it, even if you don't yet understand the why. If this is you, don't worry, you're not alone. We put the same question to a number of professionals across all sorts of fields, and well, most of them couldn't define what change management was with much confidence at all.
What is change management?
I have no idea. What is
it? Do you know what change management is?
I have no idea.
Have you ever heard of it before?
Nope.
No clues at all?
None.
Okay, so do you know what change management is? Have you heard of it before?
No. What is it?
You might be surprised at just how often I get this question, even from professionals not unfamiliar with large, multifaceted corporate environments. Across any sector, whether you're in healthcare or technology, many people, even those involved in active change initiatives right now, struggle in defining and understanding the world of change they're living in. If this sounds familiar, you've probably found yourself thinking, what even is this change management thing? No, seriously, Molly, tell us, what is it? Okay, here goes.
The intent or the purpose of change management is to deliver the human component of the change.
That was Claire Garretts. Claire and I met about 6 years ago when we were both briefly on the organizational change management team at Providence Health and Services. She has written books on change management and has been a change consultant and leader in the corporate world for some 40 years. Although Claire is now retired, she still considers herself a change advisor and an advocate for the industry. I still consider her my mentor. With actual decades in change management and a graduate degree in sociology under her belt, surely we can turn to her for a little clarity in defining what change management actually is, right? Let's hear that clip again.
The intent or the purpose of change management is to deliver the human component of the change.
All clear? Just kidding. If you're thinking that really didn't help much, well, you wouldn't be alone in that. But the reason even Claire, with all her years of experience and corporate prowess, struggled to answer this question in one succinct little soundbite right off the bat is because it's a really hard question to begin with. Change management is a vast and ever-evolving field. We hear more about it in the corporate world today than we ever have before, but let's be clear, it's still far from common knowledge. And that means, well, even the people who know what it is struggle with exactly how to define it. Let's hear from a few other industry experts. Here's Mariana Thomas Savage. Mariana and I also worked together back in my Providence days. While we were technically peers in our group, she has always been ahead of me in terms of how enthusiastically and proactively she learns about the craft of change management. She is naturally gifted as a change manager and always provides me with amazing information about how to take my skills to the next level. Currently, Mariana works for Cigna as a national change management expert. Let's hear how she defines it when pressed for an on-the-spot answer.
I typically say that change management is a combination of psychology, organizational psychology, communications, and project management.
Did that clear things up? No? Let's see if my friend Ed West can provide a little clarity. Ed is a professor at the University of Washington, Department of Health Services, and has worked in and taught transitional methodology for years. His students are working on master's degree in healthcare administration, and while he says that most of them likely won't ever become professional change managers, in order to be effective senior executives and leaders, they will need to be familiar with the change management field. Still, when one of my producers asked him to define change management, this happened.
To people who don't know already what it is, how would you define it? Uh-oh, I stumped you.
I'm cheating.
Even the professor felt put on the spot by the question and had to refer to his notes. See, you are absolutely not hanging out there all alone in the dark. Funny enough, one of our random man-on-the-street interviews actually sort of nailed the general definition we were looking for.
Change management is figuring out how to implement changes and how people will react to them within an organization.
That's more like it. Change management is, first and foremost, a discipline. And more importantly, one focused on how to handle the people side of change in order to achieve a desired business outcome. Think of it as a collective term, meaning it encompasses many approaches for how to prepare, support, and help guide teams and individuals through organizational change. So now that we've defined this broad and ever-changing field, let's dig into the why a little bit more. Because without a strong why to anchor your change initiatives to, you could find yourself floating down the creek of transition without a paddle, so to speak.
At its core, change management is the vehicle that moves the people, as they say. So it moves them not only physically, but emotionally. You know.
Remember, when Mariana defined change management as a combination of organizational psychology, communications, and project management? She went on to note that this, of course, is not a perfect definition, but rather a look at its component parts.
Change management is about transition and from the current into future state and helping people through those stages. As change managers, we look at how people move through change. So what's the journey that we make psychologically from being in current state to being in future state?
Oftentimes, especially in organizations without an existing change management team in place, this effort can be hidden under another name.
Sometimes change management is called also transition management. Sometimes it's called readiness.
Whatever you might call it, one thing is for sure. In today's modern world, it's becoming more and more critical to any businesses or organizations that want to be adaptable and ultimately competitive in its field. To see proof of this, one only needs to look as far as the growth of project management as a multi-sector industry over the past few decades.
A long time ago, we used to help here. project management, was not existent. people just, they just did it. You know, they said, okay, you know, we're going to change from this model to that model. And without much organization, they just did it. And it came in healthcare IT, which really drove the introduction and integration of project management in healthcare over the past 20 years.
But as project management started to catch on, organizations began to see it as a new, cutting-edge skill to have within their ranks, giving them an advantage over competitors. Today, it has moved from new and exciting to absolutely essential.
If you don't have project management, you're at risk of losing millions of dollars to your organization. So change management, I think, is going through that same thing.
Of course, integrating an effective change management plan into an existing organization is no easy feat. But I would argue that the benefits of starting to build the infrastructure of change now, no matter what the future plans your business faces, far outweigh the risks of kicking the change can down the road.
If organizations are going through difficult times, they typically will first say, well, we don't need change managers, because, you know, we're going to cut costs and, you know, and change management is first to go. And that's really because they don't believe in change management, but that's because they got themselves into that position in the first place.
In many ways, change management is still a very misunderstood profession. And it's often only after a bad change experience that organizations and their leaders start to get hip to just why it's rapidly becoming so essential. If you really want to succeed at change, it's important to understand that in order to be adaptable, organizations need to also find flexibility within the more rigid framework of their existing structure. Here's an example from Claire, who I'll remind you is our most senior expert on today's episode, which is to say she really knows what she's talking about.
Of all the projects I've worked on, I mean, almost none of them ever come in the way they're originally envisioned because you just can't foresee everything. One of the last major projects I was on, the beloved CIO was fired 3/4 of the way through the project. I'm telling you, that was not on the project plan. And that threw a monkey wrench in thing. People were literally in tears over it.
When the unexpected happens, like the firing of a key leader, it can wreak havoc on any workplace, especially one in the midst of huge change initiative. I wish I could tell you that these things are rare, but the truth is they aren't, not by a long shot. So now that you understand more about why you need change management, let's take a moment to broaden the scope on what change actually looks like. At this point, you may have quite a few questions cropping up. What sort of change necessitates a change management plan? At what point in the process should change management begin? How the heck do I start? Don't worry. Take a deep breath. We'll cover all these issues and more over the course of this series, I promise. But for now, let's start with the what. What kind of change requires change management? What does the change look like? And how the heck do I identify it? Change can present itself in many ways. It could be a change to the workplace process, the introduction of a new technology or product, or the revamping of a company's organizational structure. It could even refer to a more tangible physical change that you might not expect, such as moving from one office to another. Here's Ed again. Years ago, Ed worked for a big company that decided to move their office from a prime downtown Seattle location to a new space in a burgeoning city suburb. He attributed the success of this change in large part to corporate culture that embraced and exemplified the major tenets of change management.
One could just, as a project manager, look at that and say, the higher priority things are getting the space built, packing, moving in, making sure everybody's organized. Those are the most important things. But what turned out to be the most important thing is people adapting to the space, making sure that we don't lose people in the move to other companies, addressing their needs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, I'm not positive this company even knew it was, quote unquote, doing change management. But they certainly were paying attention to how their people were adapting to the physical change of the environment, not just logistically, but emotionally. They put their people at the center of the process, and this made all the difference.
I think when change management is done well, typically people don't know that it's actually been done, because it just seems natural. Things just flow.
That was Martiana again, and the point she made is a poignant one. I often call change management a stealth profession for this very reason. You may not see it, hear it, or smell it, but it's still there, working its magic and seamlessly and transparently making people work better together. In order for organizations and leaders to best poise themselves to effectively undergo change, Ed recommends getting in the habit of thinking of change as an ongoing process. How do you do this? By incorporating the mantra, assess and adapt, into your leadership process, and in so doing, your company's culture. If you don't, and instead approach change reluctantly, on a case-by-case basis, or without properly estimating the scope of its reach, you may end up creating some unanticipated trauma. And when you create new trauma around change, you then have to backpedal to remedy.
It very much is a living thing. To me, change is part of the operations. You're constantly going to go to change. Change is ongoing, but you have to manage it just like your operations and take out the trauma of each change so it becomes normal and a growth opportunity as opposed to a destructive situation that you have to manage.
I'll let you in on a not so little secret. If you're really serious about upping your change management game, you won't have to look very far to find some changes that need managing. Here's how Claire puts it.
It's people. It's universal. It's everywhere.
What does this mean? Well, simply put, it means it doesn't matter what kind of change you're trying to implement. It doesn't even really matter if your organization doesn't currently have a change initiative on the books. Change is coming, whether you're ready for it or not. I'll let our resident professor Ed explain it another way.
What's at risk isn't always necessarily failure for change, right? I mean, certainly that is, you know, the most prominent thing that you're fighting against. But also, if you don't manage change well, you still will get change, but you will get the wrong change, or you won't get the change that you wanted, or you'll get an outcome that wasn't expected that you also have to mitigate, right?
Confused again? Don't worry. The important thing is to remember here, whether your business is a small, lean startup or a large multinational corporation, is that change in any business environment is inevitable. And managing change doesn't just mean making the switch from an old process to a new one. It's about managing the physical, technical, and emotional elements of whatever change you're working on in a way that delivers you and your team to your desired outcome. Hopefully, without too many hiccups along the way. It effectively relies almost entirely on people. And so, as you might expect, good change management is most effective when it focuses on the people most impacted by that change. Now that we've established our change reality and accepted that change is an ongoing, ever-present, constant state, we can move on to the how of it all. Now you might be thinking, come on, Molly, you've just told me change is happening everywhere, all the time. How exactly am I supposed to start managing all this continual change now?
I always tell my students and also tell or start my projects off by saying to folks, hey, guys, we're going to build this airplane as it's flying, or we're going to build this ship as it's sailing. And so, you know, we're going to have to really work together on this.
Don't worry. Building your vehicle for change while you're already in transit isn't as hard as it sounds. This is where change management methodology comes in. But first, a quick primer on change methodology. And when I say quick, I mean it. There are quite a few change management methodologies out there. There are even a few you may have heard of already, like the ADKAR model, a change management framework developed by PROCY back in 1998. There's PCI, or people-centered implementation, there's agile management, there's the Kubler-Ross model, there's Six Sigma, the list goes on and on. Rather than outline all various schools of thought on change methodology, trust me, we'll get into many of these in the future episodes, Let's instead take a more philosophical approach and focus on the elements I've identified and incorporated into my own hybrid change methodology practice. My hybrid approach, while heavily influenced by the more traditional schools out there, resembles a combination of elements that I've refined over years of trial and error in the field. Remember the assess and adapt mantra we mentioned earlier? Get ready to reap the benefits of my own years of evolutionary process practice. But before we begin, let's hear a little encouragement from our resident professor. When I first started this project, one of my producers asked me what's the most important thing a novice to the world of change management needs to know. My answer, that it's not just about communication and training, served as a launching pad for the series and helped define its ultimate goal: to empower you with the tools to implement change that resonates throughout your organization authentically, effortlessly, and repeatedly. This question was so revealing, we started putting it to every change manager we talked to. We'll get into my answer later, but for now, let's hear what Ed has to say when we asked him the same question.
The one thing that I would say is that change is something that you can control. Change is something that people are terrified of because it's unpredictable. Many times you don't have control over it because it's being done to you. And many times, at some point within change, it's not going to be a great experience for you, even the good ones. So, you know, the message that I think novices need to understand is that change management principles gives you, it empowers you, it gives you back control of your life.
Ed likens understanding change management principles to discovering newfound freedom you never knew you had.
Why? Because, you know, you can walk through life, walk through situations with the confidence of knowing that whatever may happen, you know, to you, whatever change may come to your life, you're able to deal with it and come out successfully from it, right? Or if you're in a situation where there's no change going on and you need to improve your life, or you're in an organization where, you know, you need to really change the direction of the enterprise from one to a totally new one, you have the confidence that this situation is going to be one that you're going to learn from, and that you're going to grow from, and that you're going to be successful.
Keep Ed's encouraging words in mind as you embark on your own change journey. What may feel overwhelming or out of reach to you now won't always feel that way. And remember, that's what this series is here for. Are you ready? Let's talk methodology. First off, let me say that there are two primary methodologies I've based my own hybrid approach off of. The first is AIM, which stands for Accelerating Implementation Methodology. It is the basis of the methodology I use in my approach. It's also the primary certification of the dozens out there that I return to time and time again, and I'm always sure to keep current on. The second is LS, which stands for Liberating Structures. And the only reason I don't also have a certification in this is because LS actually doesn't have one. As evidenced by its name, Liberating Structures is the more freewheeling, anti-establishment of the two methodologies we'll be using here. While they are disparate methodologies on paper, I've spent years combining and refining elements of each to best bolster one another. This evolutionary process has resulted in the birth of my change manifesto hybrid approach. Let's start with AIM. AIM is a well-established systematic methodology of putting the human factors of change into place in any type of process or product implementation. This methodology provides a top-to-bottom, start-to-finish set of principles and practices that ensures that change is organized and ordered to support achievement of the business and technical objectives. Basically, this translates to making sure the outcome achieves the ROI, or return on investment, that an organization has made. Remember, we're talking about the resources an organization invests into a project, whether it's time, money, personnel, or something else. Those resources are valuable, and in order to be worth an investment, they have to be used in service of the organization. And this, just like all of change management, is all about the people. If you don't incorporate change management from the beginning, you may complete your project, you may even achieve your technical and business objectives, but you will never achieve the ROI that you plan for. This is because without change management, your people, who I would argue can be the most valuable resource, will not be aligned with the change. We'll talk a lot about this in the next two episodes, but for now, the main takeaway is this. Change management is the crash dummy approved vehicle your team will use to drive themselves from their present to their future state. But the car won't do them much good if they don't know how to drive it. That skill comes from your organization capacity for change, which is commonly referred to, as Mardiana says,
teaching people to fish.
So how do these two methodologies work together? Harmoniously, as it happens. AIM's emphasis on the structural elements of change provides a roadmap for guiding a project, along with techniques to address all the typical aspects of change management. As far as methodologies go, it's thorough, straightforward, and well-proven in providing the necessary steps to a successful implementation. And perhaps most importantly, it offers a simple approach to an otherwise complex set of drivers. I use the AIM process as a starting framework for any change process. Not all of the pieces fit for each and every project, but there are fundamental elements of AIM that I use every time, such as the sponsorship process. We'll talk more about sponsorship later, and in great length in episode 4, Assembling Your Change Team. For now, just think of AIM as the starting point, a blueprint by which to build your vehicle for change. Got it? Good. Now let's talk liberating structures. Liberating structures, or LS for short, is a more organic and freeform practice that I like to use in conjunction with AIM framework we just discussed. LS is based on 33 microstructures and design elements that provide a complementary set of facilitation practices designed to engage and liberate everyone involved in the change process by providing them with a minimally viable structure to surface issues and deal with them as a group. In other words, LS is just structured enough to make a process of engagement viable for a group grappling with change and just flexible enough to provide for open, free-form solutions. When weaving these elements into the structure of AIM, LS works to enhance the ability to enact change optimally. I have a few go-to analogies that I use to explain how these two methodologies can work together, in tandem, within a change initiative. But the simplest one is this: AIM is the cake and LS is the icing. With me so far, to elaborate this a bit further, AIM provides the how of the change engagement process, and LS surfaces the what for understanding the resistance to any specific change. We'll talk much more about change engagement and understanding and surfacing resistance in episode 2, Learning Your Change Capacity. But for now, just remember that while successful change management will provide you a structural process for facilitating that change, that structure is flexible by design. Why is flexibility so key? Because as we've talked before, not every solution will work for every project. Not every team will function the same way. Not every change will follow an identical path. By using these two methodologies in conjunction with one another, you'll be providing yourself with a map to successful change with several potential routes to the desired outcome. And having options means you'll be able to engage your team in the change process and, using their feedback, find the best route together. So now we've laid the groundwork for change and dipped our toe into the vast ocean of methodologies. I bet you're wondering how you can take these concepts and actually apply them. Lucky for you, the process of weaving the two together is pretty simple. First and foremost, the number one tip that will absolutely transform your change capacity and set you up for success is, drumroll please, including change management at the onset of any new project. Whether you're rolling out a new product, updating an old process, or introducing a new technology, it's always best to incorporate change management into the planning stages. Of course, in the real world, this isn't always feasible. But as you expand your own change management knowledge base, you'll gain a greater understanding for the importance of planning for change from square one. I won't spend any more time now giving you examples of the dangers of not including change management in your project processes from the beginning. We talked about that some already, and we'll continue to dive into more case studies over subsequent episodes. However, I do want to note that if you are working to weave change management into an existing organizational culture and meeting some resistance, remember that resistance is both common and ubiquitous, especially in larger, well-established industries with a long history of success in doing things well and a particular way. Let's toss it back to Mardiana for a bit of context.
The biggest, I think, issue is that you don't realize the benefits of your initiative or your project, whatever you call it, and the same speed that you would if you did have a change manager up front. So there is a direct correlation to the ROI that you're getting from the project. So sometimes people think that we do change management because we love people and we want everybody to get along. And that's partially true. We do love people. We want everybody to get along. But that's not why we do change management. We do change management because we really want to help the organization realize the outcomes that they set to realize. When you haven't included your project change manager from the beginning, you have set your timeline back. And so the benefits don't start to get realized until much later.
If you're working within an existing organization that doesn't embrace change as easily as you'd like, remember that transformational shifts don't just happen overnight. There's a difference between incremental and transformational change, and we're not interested in the former. You can't cross a chasm in two steps. You have to make big leaps. There's a popular saying that goes something like this. In Chinese, the word for crisis and opportunity are the same. Now, a more robust dive into the etymology of this phrase will show that while this phrase may be well known, its accuracy has been hotly debated by linguists and native Mandarin speakers the world over. But for our purposes, I'll just say this. We can still learn from its meaning regardless of the linguistic misrepresentations. Another modern interpretation of this idea is never waste a good crisis. This version is most often attributed to Winston Churchill, although ironically, this fact is also cast in doubt. Either way, the takeaway is the same. It may just take going through a difficult change initiative to give you the proof you need to make a winning case for change management to the powers that be. Sure, you may have to do rework, mitigate the negative emotions from your staff, strengthen communication streams, or offer remedial training after an abysmal change experience. But trust me when I say this is a lesson that may be hard for organizations to learn at first, but once they go through it, it has sticking power. My next tip, have patience for the process. We started off this episode by trying to define this thing called change management. The person with the longest career in change management, a whopping 40 years, Claire Garrett, said the intent was to deliver the human component of the change. What that really means is in order to create successful change, we as agents of change have to redefine what change and success looks like within our organizations. And as Claire would say, it's all about preparing for this new environment, whatever it may look like.
So whatever is needed of the staff or the leadership team, whoever's impacted, whatever they need to do differently, prepare those people so that they can perform in the new environment. And whatever that means, whether they have to learn a computer or they learn how to speak differently or they have to go to a therapist, you know, give them what they need. Because in other words, we're saying, okay, that was then, this is now. In the now, for you know, what we're looking at for the future, what does a good job look like? And be able to characterize that so that we can actually define what success looks like. And then change management's role is to deliver people who are prepared in that way.
Simple, right? Just kidding. Well, I know we've covered quite a bit in this first episode. Rest assured, your change management journey is well underway. So sit back, relax, get ready for another smoother sailing ahead. We've talked a lot today about the what and the why of change management and only just begun the how. Next episode, we're going to dive the rest of the way into the how. starting with the very first step, learning your change capacity. Warning, there will be a test of sorts. Don't worry, it's not an actual test, but rather a little assessment. In order to build an environment conducive to change, you'll first have to take stock of your current organization and its capacity for change. And in order to do this, we're going to have to talk a bit more about human nature, psychology, and the science of resistance. Until then, swing by my website, thechangemanifesto.org, to access some awesome resources and exclusive materials to help you navigate your change voyage. In the meantime, just remember, it doesn't matter if you want to go by wagon train or rocket ship, I can help you with change.